board meeting tonight.
It is the first board meeting of 2016, and we appreciate all who are here for being here. I want to read our board norms. This is something we do at every board meeting. This is what the board adopted in June 25th, 2015. We will put students first. We will demonstrate respect for the process by being on time for all board meetings. Being prepared for all board meetings. We will demonstrate effective and positive communication by being transparent in all communication, by being open, honest, and accurate. Listening to understand, giving complete attention, avoiding interrupting, avoiding side conversations, and making responses that are on topic. Gathering input from all board members, watching personal airtime, maintaining confidentiality. We will support the decisions of the board once the decision has been made. All right, our first, for your information, the board met at 3:30 and had a walkthrough of Logan High. It's very exciting to see the building starting to come together. Because we have a steel building, you don't see the masonry on the outside, but the inside is getting to be amazingly completed. And so very exciting and wonderful to see some of the views that are available for our students and teachers in the future. Our first discussion item, this is a work session, our first discussion item will be on the Crum Brothers liquor license request. Our presenter is Superintendent Frank Schofield.
Thank you. We recently received a request from the Crum Brothers Bakery, which is over west of Logan High School, as they have been kind of expanding their offerings and building their business. One of the things they're planning on doing is holding or providing weekend brunches. As part of that plan and the process they've been going through, there's been a request to the city to allow them to have a liquor license. That does require our approval as a school board before that can take place, and they can continue forward with their business plan. So that really is the topic for discussion. As I've looked at it, we have multiple other businesses in the area that do have liquor licenses, so it's not as if we're putting a new business close to the high school that is going to be providing alcohol. And as they've shared information with us, I feel like this is one where we have a business that is working and is committed to being responsible with their sales, and it's not something that's going to place our students or our community at any risk. Based on that, my recommendation to the board would be that this is something that we approve so that we can support that business moving forward. But I know we have a representative from Crum Brothers here this evening if there are questions the board would like to ask. But that would be my recommendation moving forward.
Would you like a motion?
Well, we can't make a motion now because this is the work session. So this would be a time if any of you have questions or comments on it. Do any of you have comments you would like to make? Christy?
Well, I do, actually, because I feel like it's not that easy. I feel like that I've really thought about it, and I've actually looked upon the proximity restrictions, which says that the commission is allowed to consider a request for a variance to any community location within 600 feet, but it will not allow the commission to grant a variance to this 200-feet straight-line measurement restriction with respect to churches, schools, and playgrounds. And so I don't think, regardless of how we feel about that, the 200-foot straight-line measurement would anticipate that we are within that requirement. The other thing is that I don't know how the city feels about the park, which is just on the other side of the power plant. There's a city park that's Crum Brothers, the city, this power plant, and then a city park, and then South Campus. So I can't see how 200 feet variance. I would think that within the park and the school district that we're within that 200 feet.
I haven't gone out and double checked that, but we can follow up and see what the distance is.
And if it's, within 200 feet, it says that they do not allow any variances if it's within 200 feet. 600 feet, there is a slight variance, but not for churches, schools, or playgrounds.
Would the city even allow them then to pursue it? Wouldn't they have already stopped them and said no because of that amount of footage?
Robert Sanderson, do you know regarding that? If you could come up and use a mic, we'd appreciate it. If you'd like to just sit here right by Stacy, we can we move that mic down? Okay.
I've been told I'm a loud mouth, so that's okay. I'll get to it. This is provided to the, from the city, and it shows the radius of the 200-foot mark, the 400-foot mark, and I believe that it doesn't have the 600-foot. But so we're, the city approved us on condition of approval by the board, the school board. So even the park is exceeds the 200 straight line radius and the 200 foot radius, but it's just shy of the three. No, it's just it exceeds the 300 foot too. But as you can see, where the batting cages come into play. On the 600-foot shortest pedestrian route.
What a name. Lynn, do you have any comments on this? I would love to see that if I could.
So according to this, then they could have the variance.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I was thinking, is that it wouldn't even come to the board if it was not already approved by the city, and they just said the board has to approve it. They would have checked out all of that already.
Well, the thing is if it says the 600 feet is, the 200 feet is a straight no. So I guess the gray area is anywhere between 200 feet and 600 feet. So we're just barely beyond the 200 feet by, looks like 73 feet.
And 95 feet. Mm-hmm.
So we're closer to the 200 side versus closer to the 600 foot side. Mm-hmm.
Which puts it in the location where a variance can be made.
So a variance could be made.
The decision.
Right.
So, are you still making the high end breads? You know.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. And then some restaurants, some things that, and your hours changing? Are they still closing at 2 or what are you?
Our hours are a little bit longer. We reopened in September with a 6 p.m. closing time. But we still make the same traditional breads. We're in the process of some wholesale contracts. And then our cafe has expanded their menu just a little bit to offer Sunday brunch and a weekend brunch and a look at a Saturday brunch as well.
I think most of your clientele are those that are, I would say, different than what Sultan's Tavern and stuff would be.
Yes.
Safe to say.
I think in comparison, we... We definitely want to offer Pabst Blue Ribbon and some of the more affordable, or you know, it's more of a mimosa kind of situation with the brunches and that thing. But that's not the
explain to some of us who explain what a mimosa is.
A mimosa is a 50-50 ratio of champagne and orange juice, and so it's served in a 4-ounce, so it's well mm-hmm. within the state law regulations and stuff like that, and that's the primary goal for us with this.
All right. Any other questions, comments at this point?
Well, I guess the question I also have is how does that impact the, I mean, they're asking for a liquor license right in the middle of a residential neighborhood.
Well, that would have to be underneath the city.
Now, that would go through the city at their meeting.
And if they've already approved it.
They haven't approved it. The city hasn't approved it.
It's not approved
by the city.
The city
has not approved it.
It's just kind of on condition for them to even look at it further. They need a variance on the zone so they can put it past their...
It hasn't gone to the city council at all.
Okay. Any other information you need to know now? We do have this on the agenda later. I know... Robert and would really like us to indicate one way or another so that he knows whether he can move forward. And so that's why we did put it on the agenda today. And so later in when we go to our regular meeting later on, we will well either have a vote or someone might table it. I never know when we have a vote. Vote, honey.
So before we stop this discussion, can we have a clarity as to like when I said, well, it seems like the city's gone far enough to the point where they bring it to us. You said that earlier that it depends upon the school board vote as to whether or not they get the license, correct?
Well, we could stop it, yes, if we did not grant, and as could others as well.
Mm-hmm. It hasn't gone to the city council yet. I understand that we're just part of the piece of the puzzle, and so the city council, from what I understand, has not even heard it. They haven't even discussed it yet.
Is that true?
To the extent that we've spoken with the city, with James Greer, he's the I believe he's the land development or kind of parks intent, superintendent kind of position there, and he has kind of helped us, kind of guided us a little bit with as far as the, you know, where we need to go, the path we have to take to get there, but it hasn't been brought up as far as I know in any kind of council meeting.
But I'm sure they know that you're going to apply.
Oh yeah, they're well aware of it. We've paid the fees to initiate the process, and this is just one of those steps.
What percent of your business is going to be based on the breads and the wholesale business compared to the restaurant type business? Are you doing now, and what do you foresee that?
Well, wholesale is probably going to be about 60% of our business, whereas by law the liquor sales can exceed 30%, and so it's really a small amount when we look at the whole overall number. We've picked up two big contracts locally that we're real excited about, and so that's really going to boost our gross on our wholesale avenue. And then moving back into Salt Lake without even using that, and that percentage could really even increase it more.
So what are your hours on your restaurant?
The cafe is open from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Wednesday through Saturday. And then we do a Sunday brunch from 9 to 3. And then we're closed Monday and Tuesday.
Right. Any other questions or comments at this point?
Thank you.
All right. Go ahead.
Do you have a bar set up, or how is this going to be set up as you look to sell?
As we look to sell, our whole face front will stay the same, and our bar setup will be put in the back. Upon entry to our cafe, it's a traditional bakery setup with display cases and breads and pastries, and we do have a small section over here for sodas and whatnot, but as far as the alcohol goes, it'll be all behind the building, but behind that separation from the actual bakery to the cafe retail side of things.
So no under 18 or 21 will be allowed to go back in that area? Is that what you have?
Yeah, that's what you have to do. You have to set it up to where 21 and over with the ServeSafe certifications has to serve it and handle it, and you have to have lock boxes, and there's a lot more to it than just the initial permit. You know, we have to invest into lock boxes, which we're ready to go and stuff like that. So.
All right. Go ahead.
Does the alcohol have to be consumed on premises, or can they get that to go?
Has to be consumed on premise. Our license that we're requesting is similar to what not even my Elements has. I'm trying to think of a similar. It's just a restaurant liquor license, which is for beer and wine, which includes champagne, but it doesn't include the spirits.
Yours doesn't include spirits?
Mm-hmm. No.
So there wouldn't be a way for a patron to come in and get some kind of alcoholic beverage and take it to go in a cup?
No, not at all.
And probably not even take a beer in a can, right?
Correct, yeah.
They will be served on site.
Be served on site.
Consumed on site.
No to-go cuppies.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments?
Well, I guess the biggest thing I have is I just feel like that we're trying really hard to reduce that kind of appearance at Logan High, and I appreciate what you're doing at Crumb Brothers. I'm sure they're going to continue on with the wonderful bakery, and I'm grateful that you guys are coming back. But it just feels like to me that I wouldn't want that in my neighborhood. I wouldn't want I just feel it's a little bit too close to residential neighborhood and definitely too close to high school. I don't know, just my feelings.
See, and I do have lots of restaurants in my neighborhood. But not that
sell alcohol.
Previously, yes, when we had several of them have been closed. Most of those have now closed down because I live close to North Logan. But, yes.
I don't have a problem with it at all, personally. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's not like we're having an argument. It's just an expression of my feelings, too. I think that there might be people, you know, there are people in the city that they wouldn't care where it's going to be. They would vote no just because the word alcohol is there. And, no, I know that. And I'm saying I don't have any problem with it at all.
Okay, anyone else would like to make a comment? Jeff?
Well, the superintendent mentioned that there are other businesses
that are within.
Do you know what those businesses are? And how close
they're
with, are?
I don't know if they're within that variance. I'd have to look. But they're the ones that are on Main Street.
Now, Beehive Grill would be just about as close, I would think.
Beehive Grill would be much more accessible to our students.
Because they have a place they go in. They actually built a place just for the students.
But we didn't have control over, at least not that I'm aware of, that we didn't have any comments about Beehive or Solson's going in. And those, I guess the thing that I would concern about this one is it sounds like their alcohol sales will be mostly during the day, correct, when our students are in school, versus the other two, Beehive Grill, I don't know when they start serving alcohol.
They serve all day.
And Solson's doesn't serve, they don't open until after.
They open at 11. That's where our students go to get sandwiches.
No, they don't. They go to Maverick now.
A couple of you are very familiar with this.
I'm like, how do you know that, Lynn?
All right.
I simply know their existence.
And I thought Beehive Grill didn't start serving alcohol till later for some reason. But I don't know.
You can get it.
You know, I think if you were to take a drive around Logan and you would look at some of the places that are close enough to homes, that are close enough to the high school, or that are just even in existence, and you look at how trashy and tacky and whatever, I mean, I add a lot of adjectives, that those places are, it just seems really unfair to deny it to a place that has a already good reputation, you know, for its business, for the people that it brings in, for its food, for its bread, for the music, the entertainment. And I know when it was said that Crum Brothers was closing, it was, you know, like American Idol was going away. So, well, not quite maybe, but for some of us.
It's a fair representation.
I'm not saying that I don't approve of Crum Brothers because I feel like you're a reputable company, but I'm just saying if we allow that within such a close proximity, we're opening the door. If some other company comes in the future and they want to build 273 feet away from Wilson, we're going to have to say, well, you did it for Crum Brothers. We have this, so you're going to have to do it for us as well. We wouldn't have to, but they would have reason to say, why are you going to discriminate against us based on...
Because there's too many now, or I don't know.
Lisa, do you have any comments on this one?
Part of our reason.
No.
Okay, you don't have any comments. Lynn, is there anything else you would like to say? All right, then thank you so much, Robert, and we will be voting on this later in the meeting. Thank you so much for being
here. Thank you.
And being willing to answer our questions. May we keep these?
Please. Yeah.
All right.
Did everyone get one?
Yes, we will take any that you have. That's really helpful to see it. And thank you for bringing those for us.
Thank you.
All right. Our next item of business in our work session is a presentation on the STEM science standards, and we will have Teresa introduce Max and let us know about this. And we invite you, where do you want to stand? Sit. We do need a mic because all of this is taped for our patrons. If you could come up here, we would really appreciate it. Okay, that would be great. And so, Max, I don't know if you want to come here and we'll let you borrow our mic right here or just what you'd like to do.
I can do that.
10 board do you want to project on? We can do either end now.
Is that bigger?
Yeah, this is bigger.
When it works.
Yeah, we do that now, so it works.
So can you hear me if I introduce him from here?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Does that work? Can you hear me if I introduce him from right here?
Mm-hmm.
So Max Longhurst is our science consultant. He is in fact with USU, but he is working with us as a consultant for science. And he is working with our elementary teachers. They started last year, so this is our second year into the work that they're doing with the elementary. And so he's going to go over what we've been doing with the STEM levy with the elementary, and then also the new standards that the state just adopted. He's just going to give you a little bit of information on that.
All right.
Would you like me to use that mic? Is that correct?
Yes. Whichever mic is the easiest for you to get to. The more we have it amplified, the better.
This is good. Whoops.
Don't want to take you out with the chair.
First of all, thank you for letting me come and share some of the things that I love to do. I love to work with teachers in science, and what I want to do is just quickly give you a little bit of an overview so you know where things stand as far as the State Office of Education and how the state science standards are moving forward. I don't know if you know, but on December 4th, the State Board of Education adopted the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade science standards. They call them the SEED standards, and so I'm going to introduce those to you and let you just have a little bit of information up front, and then I'm going to introduce some of the things that have been going on with the professional learning that has been taking place within your district in K-5, and then we'll have some questions at the end that you're welcome to ask at that point. To begin with, the SEED standards are rooted in research. And when I say rooted in research, I'm talking about over the last 15, 20 years, we have had the AAAS and some of those acronyms that you're not going to know, National Science Literacy Organizations, who have put together a document called the framework. That framework was then used by the state to deliver and create the SEED standards. SEED stands for Science, Engineering, and Education Standards. There's a link here in this PowerPoint. I believe Teresa has it and will send it to you, so you will have access to this, so you don't need to take any notes necessarily on these specific items.
We can put this on our website as well, correct? If what's appropriate.
Yes, you can use items that need to be used.
All right, thanks.
Correct. I just want to make sure that I don't have any spelling errors or anything before it goes on a website.
Oh, we can catch those quickly.
Just so you have a background and an understanding of where all of this information came. In the 1990s, there was something called the Benchmark for Science and the Science Standards. That fostered our science standards here in Utah, and in 2002, that's when those standards were developed and created. Since that time, Taking Science to School and several other documents have been created based on research to inform this phase one idea that there is a K-12 science education framework that we should be identifying and we should be helping students have for scientific literacy. We want, hopefully, everyone would want a scientifically literate population. We want our students and our community to be scientifically literate. With that, the Utah SEED standards have been developed. Now, many of you might have questions about the next generation science standards. NGSS is a national document created by states, not by the national government, but by states, that was a model for our SEED standards. And so the SEED standards use the latest research. That's what scientists do. We use the latest research. So the next generation science standards were used in developing the SEED standards. The SEED standards, I think, as you will see, have a little bit better layout for our teachers, positive things for our teachers. Some things that you will notice that are interesting or new, science literacy is number one, and that's what we're looking for and trying to develop. There are three specific dimensions in the SEED standards. Number one, scientific and engineering practices. So what do scientists, what do learners in our schools do to engage in science? What are the practices of science? That doesn't mean force and motion. Force and motion are down at the very bottom, and that is a disciplinary core idea. So there's scientific practices, then there's also cross-cutting concepts, ideas that go across grade levels, across grade bands, and across content level. For example, when we talk about patterns, there's patterns all over the world. Everywhere we look, there are patterns, and that is helps us with our scientific understanding and literacy. The last piece that I wanted to share with you is that strands and standards are the focus of the SEED standards. These are going to be new terms for our teachers. They are not going to be familiar with what a strand is or what a standard is. They will have an understanding of what a standard is, but in the form of the SEED standards, this is going to be something new. The State Office of Education is looking at this terminology, strands and standards, to go into every curricular area. So mathematics, English, language arts, all of those curricular areas are going to use these common terms. What I'm going to do is I'm going to share with you just a document that's hard copy, but as I said, there's an electronic copy for you, and you'll be able to see that. These standards are written very uniquely, and what I wanted to do was just show, I should have put it on a PowerPoint, but I thought you might have this in front of you. The strand is written across the top. The standards are identified here, and each strand has 2, 3, 4 standards within it. The unique thing about these standards is that each cross-cutting concept, each practice is identified, underlined with a colored document or bolded or italicized, so that as teachers, I know what practice, what cross-cutting concept I am looking at trying to develop for my learners. That's just a quick overview. I think this phrase at the very beginning is very powerful for you and for our teachers. Classroom teachers are faced with a challenge of teaching science in fundamentally different ways than they have ever seen or experienced. We're going to ask teachers to engage learners, not have them memorize facts. And if you think that science is all about memorizing facts, that's what the standards are trying to change. It's more about the practices. It's more about how do you function and use this scientific literacy in your daily life. With that, you have been generous to your teachers. The STEM levy funding has provided a number of opportunities for K-5 teachers to be able to begin this process of understanding how to teach science in very effective ways. And some of this, I don't want to bore you with language from the university, but I do want to be really clear. The premise of why you fund professional learning is to enhance learning. And if we can't connect learning of students, achievement of students, with professional development, we may be missing what we need to be doing. And so linking what teachers do in the classroom to what students learn is tremendously important. Some of the most recent research that I'm looking at, I've worked with 8th grade science teachers down in Salt Lake and in Davis County. We did this reformed science teaching practice where inquiry was a real focus. What we are seeing is that students that are low socioeconomic, minority students, are raising and increasing their achievement while the whole population is also increasing. And so that, for me, is a home run, meaning that not only are high-end kids increasing and getting better, but also those students that are in that achievement gap, that are low-achieving students, that they're also increasing, but they're increasing at a more rapid rate. So the achievement gap is closing, but all students are learning.
Everybody's going up.
Correct.
Okay.
Some of the current states of professional learning. Why are you going to fund professional learning? You need to know that. You need to know the reason why you would do that. There are five different pieces of literature from research that really tells us what we should be doing in professional learning. One, it needs to focus on content. It needs to be active learning or educative in form, meaning that the teachers experience the learning. If we're going to ask teachers to do something that they've never done before, it's fundamentally different than what they've ever seen, then we want them to have some kind of an active learning experience, an educative experience. The other idea, or the next one, is the alignment of teacher and learning goals. A lot of times teachers think one thing and the learners need something different, and so being able to align those goals is tremendously important. Effective duration is one other thing, and I want to be clear about effective duration. Effective duration, the amount of time that a teacher spends in professional learning, but also the amount of energy and effort that a district or school administrator shares with those teachers so that they can see that the initiatives are going to be long-standing, long-term. If we just flash in the pan, we will not achieve the results we want. And there's a neat, neat quote from one of your teachers that I'm going to use in literature when I write because I think it provides a fabulous illustration for this particular piece. The next one is collective participation. When we have groups of teachers working together, that they have collaborative roles with one another and they can rely on one another. Some of the challenges is that we need to develop ownership for these teachers, not just tell them what to do. And if we allow them to own the learning, the hope is that there won't be any lethal mutations, meaning things that we don't want to happen. So if they are able to stay true to the key concepts, that's important. The next thing is I want to just get to the data. You all have funded professional development with your teachers. This was the project. We had organizational ideas that happened over the last 18 months. We did some development with your teachers. There were 12 teachers last year, and now there are 20 in a cadre of teacher leaders. Phase three is engagement, where we're going to invite all teachers within the district in K through 5 to participate. That happened in December. I don't know if you were aware of that, but in December you had every elementary teacher in one building learning about how to provide good science instruction for students. It was an amazing experience. Talk to your teachers that were a part of it. The last piece is that there needs to be ongoing professional development, and that's going to happen over the next several months and hopefully into the future. Again, that commitment to initiatives that are going to take place, developing a strong commitment for long term is important. Here's some of the specifics. You know you have 6 elementary schools. You know that you have 150 elementary teachers, all of which were a part of the project. The district-wide sharing has been, it's 18 months in now, and we're starting that dissemination to all teachers within the district. Here's the data. You want to know what's happening in your district. You want to know what's coming from your teachers. One of the emergent themes, we did a focus group and we collected that data and then we analyzed that data. The data informs us that there is a need for a formation of a core group of teaching peers. One of your teachers said, I feel like sharing with our colleagues and coming back and having the discussion is so valuable that they haven't experience with science. They go out, work with their students, and then they come back and they discuss that with their colleagues. In fourth grade, in third grade. One of the key pieces, which was really interesting, and I'm excited to get some more data on this, they have a great fear of presenting to their peers. They're worried about presenting to their peers. However, when I watched them present to their peers in December, they did a fabulous job. Fabulous. Next, another emergent theme. There are 4 of them. The next one is experiencing educative opportunities as a learner. The facilitator is modeling what it looks like. These teachers are experiencing it new ways that they've never seen. He's given us a hands-on phenomena that we are doing. If we think we can just tell teachers what to do and then ask them to go into their classroom and have it happen, it's not going to. So that's the second emergent theme. The third emergent theme from your teachers is guiding questions with learners. This is something that your teachers in elementary grades are really struggling with right now. How do they ask appropriate questions? Because currently they have a very scripted approach in some other content areas. And so in science, it's challenging if they don't have a question to pose and ask. And when an inquiry is involved, you can't have a predetermined question all the time. And so I provided some questions for the teachers, and I took them down pretty quickly. And they said, no, wait, I need to write those down. I hope that we can empower teachers to be able to know how to create those processes, not just follow a script. The last one, continuous opportunities to process and implement new ideas. Crockpot training. This is the term that I think is so amazing. One of the teachers said, we need to have crockpot training, not microwave training. Crockpot training meaning long-term, multiple experiences with it, not just 1 year, multiple years, so that when we ask teachers to change, we're asking them to change fundamentally for long periods of time that we know will make a difference for learners. This last one is just a quick discussion item. The landscape of science education is changing, and we need to empower our teachers. And so my hope is that you'll continue to be able to help your teachers with some of the funding that you have available to you, but we need to be strategic about it. Use your teachers and develop that cadre of teachers within your own district to make the gains that you hope to gain and be able to have those teachers be a part of that. They will develop ownership attributes. If you talk to any of the group of 20 that we've been working with, they are starting to own these practices, and they will fight not only their peers, but anybody who comes into the room with evidentiary-based statements to say, this is why I'm doing this kind of instruction, and I have evidence to support why it's happening. Wouldn't you want that for all of your teachers? And I hope that's where we're headed. These are some of the things that Logan School District should do. I hope that you're hearing what I'm saying in that. I hope I'm a consultant and a little bit of an expert in science education. If I don't tell you what I think we should be doing, I'm remiss. I think we should have a core group of teachers in every grade level that have the ability to lead their peers. I think that we also should have an educative learning experience for all professional learning. And when I say professional learning and professional development, those are two different things. Professional development we do to teachers. Professional learning, we engage teachers and get them involved in the process. The last two items are making sure that questioning is something that we really build skill in. It's something that our elementary teachers don't have a lot of skill in, and I think that they desire to have that. And then committing to ongoing professional development. Thank you for letting me talk at you.
Questions. For Max, my big question, Max.
Hey, put that back. Roll it back on screen, please. Thank you.
Yep. Is I've been trying to get to the K-5 standards on the state website, and they just say they're in development.
The K-5 standards are the same standards we've had since 2002.
Okay, so they are the same.
Only K6, 7, and 8, or excuse me.
Okay, I can find the 6, 7, and 8 changes.
And those are the only ones that have been adopted by the board.
So they are the same standards, they're just being presented in a different way, or explain that to me.
Okay, so 6, 7, and 8, brand new standards, seed standards.
And we're aware of that, and we've seen them.
K5 and high school have not been developed yet. They are in the development phase. The state office was hoping to get 6, 7, and 8 passed, and my understanding, this is always subject to change when the state office is involved, but my understanding is that adoption will occur at the beginning of next school year, so 2016-17 will be the adoption of the case or of the 6, 7, and 8 standards. The year following,
adopted December 4th,
2016. It was adopted, but implemented. Sorry,
implemented, okay.
Implemented for teachers. So teachers are going to start to implement that next school year.
All right.
The following year, 17-18, is when that will be assessed by the state. K-5 and high school are a year behind that, if not 2 years behind that. The purpose for the STEM levy was for K-5 teachers to be able to have expertise and skill. I pushed through that fairly rapidly. The practices are what we focused on and what we are focusing on with your K-5 teachers. New and appropriate practices of science instruction can happen with any content you have.
Okay. So the standards, it doesn't matter what standard, these are effective ways to provide instruction and practices with students.
Correct.
In science.
Correct. Okay. And so in a 2 or 3 years from now, you're going to have new K-5 content, okay, but the practices will remain the same because we know what those are.
All right, that helps me.
If there's going to be a 2-year lab, say 6, 7, 8, gets implemented next year, and then it takes a couple of years to even approve of 9, 10, 11, 12, then you have this large gap. What happens to those 6th, 7th, 8th graders who are used to this new thing, and now they're going to go back to this old thing that to them is totally foreign?
That's a challenge for our teachers, and that's why I would encourage you to focus on setting practices and cross-cutting concepts now, because we know what they are. Those are not going to change from grade level to grade level. The content will. So, for example, if you're trying to teach force and motion with a pulley system, great, you can teach force and motion in 5th grade or 6th grade, but if the teachers understand the practices, they can teach it in 4th and 5th in high school. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, except that the 4th and 5th grade teachers aren't going to be teaching in high school.
Whatever grade level they are, they can utilize the best science practices, and that's the concept that we want to be able to have. The shift is teaching with practices, not just changing content. When we all went to school, we were taught science in a very fact-oriented way. It was a language class.
And whatever the book said, that's what we learned.
Right. And so this is a much different process. We want students to think and engage and ask questions and pose questions and have hypotheses formed. By the way, there isn't a scientific method, right? There's scientific methods, and we can be very useful in trying to have different ways of understanding new things. Science is a way of understanding and knowing, and I don't think that we share that as well as we could with students. It's a way of knowing and understanding, not the way.
So do you feel like as time progresses that science will incorporate more of the school day? Because currently they don't have a huge chunk of time in the school day, so how will that incorporate with math and literacy?
My opinion?
There you go.
I believe that science should be incorporated in reading and mathematics. When we talk about STEM education, good science teachers are incorporating reading and language with that. They're having their students write documents that are fact-based. They are experiencing ways to graph and use data and put data into graphs. That's going to improve our students' achievement in mathematics scores, not just science.
We know you've worked with our math teachers.
Yes.
And we have a lot of educators who are a lot more comfortable with math now. How much of this is similar and how much of it is different from, was it more process that you taught with math and this is more practices? Compare and contrast the two as if you were doing...
If I had to look at the practices of science and the processes of mathematics, there's 8 practices of science. There are 7 practices of science. There are about 4 or 5 that line up, that align perfectly, almost word for word. The other 3 are a little bit different. And so, yes, it is very similar, and as I've worked with the teachers in science, what I've noticed is there's many comments that they have. Oh, this is just like our math. This is how we need to be doing our math. Or they've had at least some exposure, so they are able to step into the science practices. It seems easier because of their math experiences.
So I think, you know, one of the most important things that was ever up there was that linking what teachers do with what students learn.
Right.
No matter what you're teaching.
And that's something that I'm going to come back to this board, or at least your IRB here in Logan. I'd like to collect more data to be able to write this up. Just Thursday this last week, I presented a program development experience to national audience, and this conversation, many of these slides were used there. And so your district is a leader nationally for how we should be implementing new science standards.
Got that, Kelly?
Sorry, what?
We are a leader nationally.
Say it again, Max, so the expert says it.
Yeah.
Nationally, I presented to a national conference last week, and this district has is implementing practices of professional learning that can be modeled or are modeled for national audiences.
So our levy money.
It wasn't as good as the first time I saw.
No, it really wasn't. Our levy money is being well used then.
Right.
I would say that it is, yes.
And that's what really excites me. I think when we took to the public the levy and we said we're going to improve science instruction for all students, I believe that that's happening, and I'm hoping we can continue to do it, because I know I have two grandsons that science is where they get excited about school.
And we need to keep that excitement from elementary, middle school, and through high school, so that when they come to the university, instead of a conversation that I had last night with a young lady who was graduating next year or in May, I don't want to go into science. I don't want to do all those science things. And we want to be able to have students experiencing and knowing that they can excel in scientific understanding and scientific job opportunities.
You know, one thing I think that anyone, I look at all the people that I know, you know, that have taught, is that whether it's art or English, science, engineering, or whatever, none of them act or are taught or exist in a little ball by itself.
No.
None of them. And I remember years and years and years ago when there was an attempt to have history, art, English, all being on the someplace together, at least sometime during the year. If you're doing a certain historical period, then you would also do the literature of that period and then the art of that period. And it was a flash in the pan sort of thing. But now...
Well, that is STEM education, that integration. And I do want you to know that your teachers are doing good things. They already are doing many of these things. And so incorporating some of the fabulous work that they're already doing and adding a couple of pieces to it is what's happening.
Great. Any other comments, questions for Max?
How are the science standards being received by the public?
There is a contingency that has some questions about it, but when the science standards were adopted, we had at the State Office of Education individuals from university professors across the state to local businessmen and businesswomen who wanted to support them. There's six public comments that are provided at the State Board of Education meetings. All six were in support and favor of the standards.
Right. Any other comments, questions for Max?
Max, thank you.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Did you say you have a handout or there is an electronic link
electronic
that we have?
There's an electronic form that has all of the new standards.
Okay.
And then in the very back of that, there's a comparison between old standards, current standards, and NGSS.
And when I went online, you can find those seed for the 6-8, but of course that's not what it is for. I was looking for K-5, and that was not the case. But all of those are available on the USOE, schools.utah.gov.
This is probably an easier talking point for you. It will come electronically, but you can have it a hard copy. It is, what is the shift? What's the vision for science education? So this is an easy talking point for you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Our next item of business is a presentation on our STAR reading assessments. I know a number of us had questions about STAR because it's different from what we've had in the past, and we want to be educated. We have Deanna Stallings, our literacy specialist.
Teresa, are you wanting to introduce this at all, or Frank, or do we just say, take it away, Deanna?
I think we should say, take it away, Deanna.
Okay, take away, Deanna.
Thank you. I just want to say, I don't know if any of the school board members have attended any of Max's professional learning opportunities, but he is amazing and frustrating. So we do this cool experiment, and we put food coloring and warm and cold water. We add ice, and it does all this cool stuff. And then he's like, why do you think you did that? And I get really brave, and I offer an answer, and I'm like, am I right? And he's like, I don't know. And I'm like, oh, man. But it's, I have seen such amazing things at these trainings, and it just piques my scientific interest so much. I want to know why the food coloring did that. But Max will never tell me.
Will you let us know when those are in the future?
Yes, the STEM district trainings.
Wide.
They are really so engaging.
They have
perfect.
Thank
you.
Okay, so yes, you do. And you'll never know whether your answer was right or not.
This is, as Barbara did post that tomorrow there is a math training. So that's on our webpage today.
Okay, so the STAR reading assessment is an assessment that some of our schools, a few of our elementary schools, have been using for years. And as a second line of data of how our kids are doing with literacy, we adopted STAR across the district, K-11. We almost said 12, but K-11. So, and a lot of the elementary schools, are using the STAR reading assessment for as their indicator for their SLOWs. So let me just give you a little bit of a background on STAR. Can't read that very well. So STAR is great, and it's different from DIBELS and different assessments because it provides teachers with the information and the tools necessary to bridge assessment and instruction. So when they get their assessments, where they get their reports, they not only see whether their student is at benchmark or below benchmark or grade level, but they get clear indicators of where their students are lacking as far as literacy skills go. And then they get lesson plans and activities, and there's ability grouping. I shouldn't say ability grouping. They group them by skill rather than just by here's our yellow kids, here's our red kids, our yellow kids, our green kids. Does that make sense? So it's a lot more intuitive. It gives the teacher so much more information to work with. The STAR assessments are computer adaptive, so they're more reliable. With DIBELS, all the kids take the same test. They all get the same assessment. With STAR, it adapts to their ability level, so it's much more thorough. And it is strongly aligned to the Utah core standards. All right, it assesses 46 reading skills in four domains. Those are the domains: foundational skills, reading literature, reading informational texts, and language. You can see how that aligns with the ELA standards. I like this graphic because it shows you that all of these domains are taught at almost every grade level. You can see kindergarten doesn't have, I can't read what the blue is there. I think it's argumentative writing, okay. My eyesight is not that good. But how it starts small and then gets big. So they are assessing the same skills, K-12, but just at different levels. You know, what should a kindergartner be able to do with STAR early literacy versus what a 12th grader should be able to do with argumentative writing, analyzing literary text, looking at author craft, all of these, you know, the 46 skills that are embedded. So it just gets bigger. And I want to go back to that because if you've looked at the state standards of ELA, in basically the standards are the same, K-12. It's just what does that look like, right? What does it look like at a fourth grade level versus a sixth grade level versus a ninth grade and so on. So I like the alignment here. DIBELS is really not that way. It's a different set of skills at different grade levels. So this is a good example, then, of how it gets bigger. So, say, in first grade, and maybe first grade, second grade, when we're looking at identifying author's purpose, a first and second grader might be looking at the understanding that the author writes texts for different purposes. Maybe mid, so middle school, they're evaluating the appropriateness of the form chosen by the author in light of the author's purpose. And in 12th grade, 11th, 12th grade, they're analyzing and critiquing how the author's use of language, organizational, again, structures, thank you, techniques, and rhetorical devices further or distract from the author's purpose. So they're all looking at author's purpose, but, and notice the verbs there. You know, lower grades, they're understanding. Middle grades, they're evaluating.
And analyzing, critiquing.
And then upper grades, they're analyzing and critiquing. So look at the depth of knowledge there. It's really a cool test assessment. This shows, so if a student gets a 680, there, that's their star score is a 680, then all of the skills that fall there in the red, burnt umber, all of those skills, they've mastered those skills. And all of the skills in the yellow, those are skills they still need to get. So those orange skills in the middle, those are the skills they're ready for. That's that zone of proximal development. So, and the teacher knows exactly what those skills are. And once they've mastered those skills, once they've assessed again, they've mastered those skills, it moves them up the scale, and now the teacher gets another set of skills for that student to work on. This is just another example. This is STAR Early Literacy, which is for kindergartners, and I think the first test of first grade. And you can see if they're at a 475, they've mastered these skills, these are the skills they're ready to learn, and they have all those skills left to master. So once the teacher has given the test, given the assessment, they get various reports, but they create instructional groups based on a skill that students need to learn, not a level. So you don't have all your reds together, all your yellows together, all your greens together. You have all the kids that need to learn finding the main point together, all the kids who need help with sentence structure together, yes? So you create instructional groups based on skill, a skill that a student needs to learn rather than ability level. Then they view the suggested skills, and then they find the instructional resources that are on STAR. So STAR gives the teacher instructional resources. Here's what you can do with this group of students. And then you go back and you assess again. Some schools we want schools to be assessing, or all schools have to assess beginning of year, middle of year, end of year, but most of the schools are assessing more often than that.
Middle and high school as well?
Mm-hmm. Is this from Renaissance Learning?
It is, Renaissance Learning.
Okay, it is.
And if you put in
STAR reading
assessment.
And then it goes Utah.
So much information.
Yep. So that's an overview of STAR. And, of course, also in Renaissance Learning is AR, Accelerated Reading, which, again, some schools are using a great deal, some schools are using a little bit, and some of our schools are not using at all.
All right. I know that Ellis has been using STAR for a number of years, and I think one of the reasons others got excited about it is because Ellis does so well. Why hasn't it been something we've been using district-wide earlier?
That is an excellent question. I would say we're sort of just because we're being more PLC, and we're getting together and we're saying, look at our results. Let's all look at, you know, we're very transparent. Where a few years ago we weren't quite as transparent. We didn't sit in meetings and have all of the elementary schools' scores up there. A few years ago, when I first came in, every school got their own set of scores. And so I think now they're looking at scores and they're saying, what are you doing? Look how high your scores are here. What are you doing? And so the principals are communicating more with each other and asking, what are you doing? And we're seeing this more with schools, going to other schools to see what their ABC programs are doing. And so I think I think our principals or our elementary schools are acting more as a PLC than they have in past years.
Other questions for Deanna?
Did you say that this is implemented K through 11?
Mm-hmm.
So walk me through how it's being implemented in the on the secondary level.
So very similarly, I would say at this point our secondary schools are not using them in the same way in that they're still trying to find a vehicle for grouping by skills and working with a smaller group of students on a specific set of skills. Whereas in the elementary school, we have that structure set up where they have power hour and guided reading. They have more opportunity to work with a like set of students. In the secondary, they've got 40 kids sitting in front of them, and they're still, I think they want to get there, but they're still trying to figure out how do I pull out six kids and work with them.
What they're trying to move the intervention towards with a specific targeted skills during intervention. And with this information, English is, math has started it, but now English will be able to move towards that.
Absolutely.
The skills during intervention.
And so when that vehicle becomes more refined, this information is going to be invaluable because they don't have any other way to drill down and diagnose where the reading concerns are.
So in this intervention, are they talking about this STAR program?
We haven't specifically talked about STAR, but math had started a test program that they've gone through for 3 weeks now where they had two teachers teach specific skills, and they showed significant improvements with the kids that were in that program for 3 weeks. And they're doing a little bit of tweaking now, and instead of running it for 3 weeks, they're going to run it for two on, two off, and then two on. But they're working with the English department and discussing now with English where they can go in and start teaching specific skills during intervention. So they're trying to drill it down so they can get more specific than where it's been more just kind of
point chasing.
Come in and I'll help you.
Chasing points.
I'll help you if you're getting a deer. Ask you come in and I'll help you. They're now trying to target specific skills that they will reteach during that time. So far, math is the only one doing
that.
But they're looking at where English is the next one that they're looking at. Where
so you might take your three ninth grade English language arts teachers, and one will teach the low, the middle, the high, or
not just teaching just their students. A teacher is taking a skill that they've identified, and it will be a group of students from all different teachers that will go in and be retaught that concept during that time.
And there are little pockets of teachers who are really trying to do this in their own classroom.
Yeah,
they're giving, here's something to work on. I'm going to take these kids over. So there are teachers who are really looking at this data and trying to work with it, but many of them feel they just don't have the right vehicle right now.
And so this provides a vehicle for them to know where kids are.
Because in the past we said, I know this kid struggles with reading,
but we don't know,
but I don't know why.
Yeah. But the obstacle, I think, in secondary level is that in the elementary level you have more aides, more parent volunteers, more people who are coming into the classroom to assist, be able to free up the teacher's time to implement the test themselves or to have an aide do that. Whereas in the middle and high school, you're reducing your volunteer and your aid time for those teachers. So I would think it would be something the district, if that's something that we're going to do going forward, that we would have to provide our teachers with additional resources.
The assessment takes about 15 minutes, which is, so it's and especially with the 1-1 devices, a teacher could administer this very quickly. You're right, they do have so many more resources. However, I really like the idea of a licensed ELA teacher doing this instruction. So, yes, they might be working with 30 kids, but it's targeted instruction. It's not turkey shooting. It's not like I'm going to teach everybody finding the main idea, whether you already know how to do it or not. And so I think that will be a real...
Which is what we've seen in the elementary schools. When we go into classrooms, we see our STAR teachers with those kids that are most critical, which is where they should be. But we also see an aide over here in the corner helping another group of students. So there's more... I just think we need...
But
more
they only have...
At the secondary and the
I'm not exactly sure how aides would work at the secondary level. Yeah.
At the secondary level, what generally has been shown to work best is not, the additional resources sometimes do come into play. What generally has a broader impact is when you re-examine the time allotment. How do you schedule time during the day? How do we create opportunities for this additional instruction? And then we help all teachers develop the skills, as Max referred to with the science. We help all teachers develop the skills to support this literacy development throughout the day. So you provide a couple things. You provide time to do, for example, what the high school is discussing with intervention time, where students who need that specific targeted instruction in an identified skill can get that. But then you also make sure that all teachers understand, okay, regardless of what content I'm teaching, how am I going to build on these skills that I know the STAR results say my students need to be developing as well. When you start with that, what you find is the opportunities for literacy development throughout the day increase exponentially. And as the time and the opportunities increase, then you're able to say, okay, now kids are getting this. Here's the growth we're seeing. Now we really get a much better picture of who are the students that now actually need additional resources. So first you look at time allocation. You look at the use of time. And once you've got that cleared up, now you say, okay, now here's a group of students where they need more than just time. We need to put some extra resources in, additional personnel, et cetera, to really get to their core needs. But if you start with the resources without having identified how the time is going to be used, you don't see the same types of gains, because you're hitting the wrong, what's the best thing? You're hitting the wrong nail first. You got to hit them in the right order.
So we've been doing STAR testing in secondary for how long?
3 months.
Oh, okay. Well, that's why this whole
brand
concept
new.
Is so new to me.
Very
because I didn't
new.
Know.
Yes,
yeah.
And
you have a 12th grader, not an 11th grader.
Who won't, probably will not be tested.
I mean, I'm very familiar with it in the elementary, but it just is so...
And it is to the teachers as well. So they've administered the test, and they're still not sure what to do with the data, even how to work with, understand the data. So we've got some training coming up on oh, we've got a date with data. Data.
Would you ever recommend that they use the Renaissance one for math, STAR math?
I don't know anything about it. Every time we bring up Renaissance math, Barbara gets a funny look on her face. So I think that's all I know is Barbara's always like, so I'm not familiar with the math assessment at all. Oh. And time intensive as well?
Okay. All right. Any other questions?
Then again, Dave, if it's
very paper intensive, so you end up printing out on a classroom desktop printer worksheets for kids dozens a day. And it's really not a very effective way to do it.
And that doesn't sound like it would be adaptive either, right, if you're doing it that way?
And it probably has changed.
I don't know.
What is the parent response? I mean, when I looked on the STAR site, it says there is a report that parents get of their assessment.
I don't know that parents have been informed that they can look at the assessment. However, at parent-teacher conferences, they are using STAR data to show parents where their child is and what skills they have mastered and which skills they are currently being instructed in.
At the middle school, they send the STAR reports home with the students. My boys brought them home this last week. So we were actually looking over, we were reading through them last night. And the STAR reports are actually quite good at breaking down what each of the score means, whether it's their percentile ranking, their ZPD, their Lexile ranking, et cetera. It's a one-page report, and it has their chart across the top that just shows each of their scores. And then the rest of the page is, this is what percentile is, this is what percentile ranking means, this is what ZPD is. This is their instructional reading level. Here's what it means. So it's a very user-friendly report if you just take the time to read through it.
I saw it online earlier, and I wondered if we used it.
It's yeah. Like so they have been going home with the middle school students.
I don't think the high school has sent any home yet, but I know that the administration has looked at it.
Excellent.
So we have it, since it's new in the secondary, I'm just trying to understand this. That's new and secondary, are we just having our teachers do it for the sake of doing it? Are they feeling like, oh, here comes another district mandated test?
Some have taken the data and are using it to inform their instruction.
I know we've had discussions with English teachers
yes.
in intervention, and they are taking the data and looking at
yes.
it and trying to figure out
they're
what
not
they need
discouraged
to do.
That it's another district.
Not the teachers that I've talked to. There may be some, but the teachers I've talked to.
And that's really not my.
Like
I don't deal a lot with the high school that because it's kind of not part of my job description, but in a little bit, I have visited with them.
Whose is it?
The principals. There isn't a literacy.
Our primary literacy supports have been geared towards the elementary up to this point. Now, one of the things that we're looking at as we get better tools for measuring literacy achievement, I remember when I was at the high school, Charlotte Hart and I actually did a project working with Dave Swenson on this, saying what do we do to actually provide some stronger literacy supports at the secondary. And at that point, the tools that we had were not... We're not very useful. So now as we're getting better, we have better access to tools that give relevant data, give it in a timely manner, and provide instructional recommendation. Now we're getting to a point where we can say, okay, now we need to move forward and provide some additional supports. So that's one of the discussions that we're having to start having is what is our plan going to be moving forward for supporting literacy development at the secondary level? Were previously the primary resources, so consequently the primary supports have been elementary.
I know I've had discussions with Mark Rubin. I know he is looking at that data and using it. I'm not sure.
I've had discussions with Jen Nilsen. She
yeah.
showed me how she was using the data.
So don't you think as they're using the PLCs too, that's where it's really going to come into play?
Absolutely. They have immediate data that they can take to a PLC meeting, where in the past English language arts data or common formative assessments have been kind of difficult to create. They're sort of subjective and they're time-consuming. You know, if you have students write, it's time-consuming. Here they have real data that they can take to a meeting.
I think they were somewhat surprised at how low of reading level some of their students are actually at.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they realize that they had some students reading at a fifth grade reading level.
Yeah, I think sometimes at high school level, like kids aren't doing reading; they chalk it up to lazy or you know the non-reader versus
intentional non-learner.
Versus,
yeah.
There are some holes in their reading abilities.
But
the thing about the data though is that if you have splinter skills, it'll show that you know you're really good here, bad you know just up and down.
Right.
Whether if
it's
you
not,
say, oh, that's
it's
a fifth
not
grade
just
reading,
a fifth grade
level.
Reading level. Or
what
yeah.
does that mean? Yeah.
Yep.
Detail,
and the high school used to use SRI, the Scholastic Reading Inventory, and it just gave them a Lexile score. And that doesn't mean anything.
That's what, when I get the files from a lot of other schools, not Logan, is that I go to find the student's reading level, and I get the Lexile score, and I go, dang.
Yep.
Because that doesn't, yeah, you're right, doesn't tell me.
Doesn't tell you, even if it's a low Lexile score, you still don't know what to do about that.
It can tell you, well, maybe he should not read that book,
right.
But it doesn't help you, help the student, you're right.
So now if we take, kind of tying this all together, if you take the data on a student's literacy skills and you have a professional learning community, let's take a social studies team, and they have STAR data on their students, and they say, okay, we've got these students that are reading at this level. Here are the skills that they've developed. Here are skills they're still lacking.
Right.
And now you have teachers who we train on how to help students develop those literacy skills. And a social studies teacher understands how to teach students questioning, clarifying, predicting, summarizing, how to make text-to-text, text-to-self, text-to-world connections, how to take margin notes, how to annotate, et cetera. Now you have a teacher who is not just teaching social studies, but they're teaching how to access the text, how to access the information. You tie that in with what we've also been doing with thinking maps, where we're talking about how to think about information, how to make information yours. Now you have a social studies class that is developing a thinker, not just someone who understands what the First Amendment says.
Or who has memorized the First Amendment.
Yes.
One time that the 3 R's are not reading, writing, and arithmetic anymore. They're being able to work with diverse groups of people, following directions, and access information.
Those don't start with R.
Huh?
Those don't start with R.
Yes.
Oh.
neither does.
I thought you were going to come with three other R's.
All right. Any other questions on STAR? Deanna, thank you, and we just appreciate what you're doing and that you're on our team.
Thank you so much.
All right, we have our next item of business is, as I was putting items into my 2016 calendar, I realized that we have a board meeting the same night as the caucuses. What is nice this year is it appears that at least the two major caucuses are meeting, the two major parties are holding their caucuses on the same night, which has not always been the case, which 2 years ago it was, well, if we do it this week, we hit the one. If we do it this week, we hit the other. And so this year they are meeting on March 22nd, which is a board meeting. I have done some telephoning, and I called my friends who are on the county council, because they are also discussing this tonight. They found the same thing I do. The times have not been necessarily set. We contacted the head of the Cache County Democrats. He believes they are going to start at 7 p.m. The leaders of the Cache County Republicans said that last time they had a meet and greet at 6, and the caucus meetings began at 7. They think it will be the same unless the state says otherwise. So that's the research I've been able to do. What Frank and I looked at, because we have talked about the desire to keep our meetings on the same weeks if possible, those second and fourth Tuesdays, because we've learned when we jump to a different Tuesday or a different night of the week, we run into some major problems. So as we had reviewed with Stacy what we have on the agenda for that day, and you have that in board book. And what we would like to recommend is that we would begin at 3 o'clock. That's not necessarily time that everyone in the world can come, but for our teachers, many of our teachers, it's almost a better time. We would be recognizing Logan High School and Mount Logan Middle School that night. What I'd recommend is that we do some other recognitions, then do Logan High, and then do Mount Logan Middle School, so that we give them some time before we would be recognizing them. And then we also have our trust lands plans approval then. So what are your thoughts about 3 o'clock?
I may have a problem with that because tennis will have started, and it's on Tuesdays, and by 5 we're usually done.
Mm-hmm.
But at 3, I don't have a schedule yet, but tennis is usually Tuesday, Thursday, and so at 3 I could have a problem.
Okay, 4 o'clock you'd probably have the same problem, though, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's usually done by 5, so.
And I know, but we have been asked to cancel all meetings during those caucus times, so you understand.
Oh, no, I understand the problem. I'm just saying I might have a conflict.
Okay, great. What about you, Christy?
I'm fine with it. I might have to leave a little bit early sometimes.
You help run things.
I've had to help run the caucus, so if I have to leave early, I might have to leave early, and I don't know that yet. So.
Well, and what we would try to do is to really expedite our meeting and do what we can to not put lots of policies or other things that night that we may even find we put a lot more at the beginning of the month, and more things are on a consent calendar that night rather than discussing it that night. You know, that would be the discussion is earlier in the month. Connie?
If anyone, either party, has that meet and greet at 6, that's really important for candidates, mm-hmm. because... Yeah, meet and greet, and yeah, so
right, and so
I know we can't help.
So we would
that.
Want to be done right. By 6, for sure.
And Lynn, yeah. And that would be better for you to meet on that same day rather than to go to a different week, correct? And what about you, Jeff and Frank?
We're working anyway, so
yeah.
We can probably do 3 o'clock.
What's your meeting schedule? I know the 21st is when they're going to.
Well,
the USOE is going to give us all the numbers from the legislature and everything in St. George. And so mm-hmm. I know sometimes those superintendent meetings, I don't know if they've given you the superintendent meeting schedule.
So will you be back by that time?
Schedule those. I think ours are just Monday morning and Monday. Monday morning we meet with you guys, and then Monday afternoon we go to USOE meeting. So I think I'll be done Monday, but I don't know. Sometimes I know superintendents have longer meetings and more meetings than we do. So.
I don't have any Tuesday meetings okay. set at this point, so we should still be fine for the board.
Okay, let us, we will put that on our consent calendar for next month, right, because we didn't put that for a consent calendar for tonight.
And how will you word it, that the board is not going to do anything important on the 22nd?
No, we are going to do, but our meeting will be held earlier, and we will try to keep it concise is what I will say. We are having a concise meeting. All right, if everybody's okay with that, we cannot hold a board meeting during the caucus meetings. And so I think it's really important, and the Cache County Council is discussing the same thing. All right, then our next item is to move to the consent calendar. We have action on extra pay for extra services. So now we're in a regular meeting. We have our first item is action on extra pay for extra services for licensed personnel. Is there a motion on the consent calendar?
I move the consent calendar as written.
All right. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, it has been moved by Connie and seconded by Lisa. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Then we have two action items. Our first action item is action on Crumb Brothers liquor license request. Is there a motion on that item?
I move that we accept their request.
All right. It's been moved by Connie. Is there a second?
I will second it with discussion.
All right. We second it, puts it on the floor. We have to have a second technically to put it on the floor. All right.
When I'm waiting, yeah.
And now we'll have discussion. Lynn, let's start with you, and we'll go around the table.
Well, as I think about it, you know, they're going to be having wine and beer. That's the two. It's not other. Now, I think where they're it's separated, students cannot go back in there. I realize it's closed, but I worry more about the Beehive and having a specially built room over there for just our students that are in it, but I guess my feelings would be I could approve it as long as it's not conflicting with the people that live in that area. It's kind of how
okay.
I think personally is a thing feel like it's a business, it's been good, and I think I don't see I'm not as concerned about it as if I was if it was another tavern or something to that effect. I think it's that's more how I feel.
Hey, Connie?
My whole reason for moving the motion was so that we could get a discussion started, first of all. And I like what Lynn said, and I would agree with Lynn. I think they have been a good business, and there are other businesses that I think would be far more of a concern. And
all right, Christy.
Put aside how I feel about. As I sat here and thought about it, we have had a restaurant near me that had a license as well, and it really didn't pose a problem specifically to my neighborhood. But that said, it's at the crux of two of our high schools, Logan High and South Campus. And I'm here to protect kids, regardless. And I can't imagine when Kelly puts this in the newspaper, which we know she will, that it's going to be received well by my constituents that the Board of Education approved a liquor license within 273 feet of the building. And I'm here to protect kids, and regardless of what they're going to serve or what they're not going to serve or how they're going to serve it, I don't feel that's what's best for kids. So I would not.
So my moving to accept it means that I am not protecting kids.
No, it's just your yeah. I'm just telling you my opinion that I don't feel like I could support that because I don't feel like it protects our students.
If I hadn't made the motion, we wouldn't be.
Okay, that's all right.
Yeah, okay. That's fine. And I would have made a motion in opposition to that.
Okay, Lisa.
I have a lot of the same feelings that Lynn has. I'm much more concerned about the proximity of Beehive Grill and the fact that they are actually trying to get our students over there right next to where they're serving.
By having the Grizzly Den or whatever they've named it.
Right next to it. That's a lot more concerning to me than Crumb Brothers serving a wine or a beer with their food, and they're not particularly trying to cater to students. It's a little concerning right in the middle of a neighborhood, but I don't think that's really our decision. Our decision is more whether we're okay with the proximity to the school. And so I guess with their limited license that they're looking at, I don't have a big issue with it.
All right. Personally, and we will go to the superintendent, and Jeff, if you'd like to weigh in on it also, you're welcome to. I would much rather have a restaurant that has a liquor that type of liquor license than a convenience store that sells beer.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that is more of a concern to me because it's much more likely, you know, and I know that police do stings all the time. Someone goes in, buys a six-pack, and then distributes it to minors. That is not possible with this type of a liquor license. And so I am less concerned about this type of liquor license than the convenience stores that are in the neighborhood that our kids walk past.
Why is it limited?
Yes, it's very limited, and you know, and we asked specifically what he's allowed to do and what he's not allowed to do. That would have been a great concern to me. When I first heard about this, I took a drive. And I drove down, and I drove in and talked to Larry Comodina, because he's the dean of, you know, dean down at South Campus. To me, South students are the ones who are going to be the most closely aligned to Crumb Brothers. So, you know, our baseball field is right there also. So I walked in, and we talked, and at first he said, no, I don't want any alcohol around. And then he emailed me later, and he said, you know, Ann, I've talked about it. I've thought about this. And the type, when it's a restaurant serving alcohol, it's under very, very different circumstances. He's actually thrilled that that's no longer an empty building because his students like to hang out around his empty building, and more kids got in trouble there, and they had to do some real supervision around that building when it was an empty building. And so he let me know that he would not be opposed to the liquor license. That really changed how I felt about things because I know he thought about his students specifically. So for me, and because I have lived by places with a liquor license, let's let everybody go through first and then I'll take repeats. Because I've lived by restaurants, I don't have a problem with it. Frank.
You know, I appreciate the comments, and I can definitely appreciate the concerns that have been shared. And, you know, I'd just like to build on kind of what Christy, the comment that she made about wanting kids to be safe. Because I thought a lot about that, you know, when this request came through. I said, okay, are we doing something that puts our students at risk? That creates a challenge for our kids. And I grew up, as you all know, I grew up in Southern California. And growing up, I mean, this ingrained in me, you walk into the supermarket, say a Smith's or whatever, you walk through the front door, and to the left is the liquor section. That's a couple hundred square feet of liquor. There's anything you would want to find all right there. That's what I grew up around. You know, incredibly easy access, you know, to purchase and find liquor if that were desired. My friends and I, for whom that was not the norm at home, being surrounded or access to liquor was not the problem. I don't, as I look at this, I think, one, there are guidelines in place that the business has to follow in terms of serving liquor, and we've heard some of those tonight. I think there is also an acknowledgement that having the liquor there is not going to, in my mind, is not putting our students at risk, because it's not the proximity to an establishment that serves liquor that, in my mind, creates the risk. It's there are other factors that come into play. And those are factors that, you know, those that are under our control, we address through the environment we create at school, the relationships we build with students, the lessons that we teach them, et cetera, to support, you know, hopefully messages and experiences that they are having at home. So that, as I thought about that, I thought, okay, what would my response be, you know, in terms of the school? And I think, you know, Lisa Lynn's comment about, you know, are the neighbors, are the individuals who live in that community concerned about it? You know, that may be. That's something that I think comes up through the city's approval part. Our responsibility is to look primarily at the impact on schools. You know, I don't know, and I've thought about, you know, if it were in my community, what would my response be? I don't think that we're putting our students at risk by its proximity to a school facility. I think there are other things that create a greater risk for the students, and we can do things to continue to build students, to strengthen them, and take care of the other risk factors that, if we're concerned about underage drinking, there are other risk factors that we can address that can prevent students from going that direction.
All right. Connie.
I agree, you know, with Frank, and I like what you said. I talked with Como also. I did not know if I was at liberty to say, but now that was...
He told me I could share.
So I didn't say, oh, can I tell everybody? You know, that made a difference for me also. But the fact is, okay, in terms of the community is going to let the city council know what they think, okay? City council is going to listen to that, I'm sure, okay? But they're not, like you said, it's not a convenience store. You can't go in and buy a six-pack or a case or a bottle or anything. It's a restaurant. It is a sit-down. You drink it on the premise, and then you go. And the students can't go back there and sit down and have lunch. If people don't even have to be worried about them watching other people drink, you know. And I know that that's a concern for some people. You know, Frank's comment about, you know, the exposure that you have. Well, anybody who lives in any other state than Utah knows that. You go into a grocery store and you see that. And I don't know if that's really a legitimate, you know, scientific study done on us, Frank, and whether or not that makes a difference. Seriously, I'm just kidding. I don't know. But, you know, used to the same thing. I think that it's the fairness of this business being allowed to continue to pursue is what we are doing, is we're allowing them to continue to pursue it. And that the, as far as the community, you know, the people in that neighborhood, then they will let them have their say also. Of course, they will have that.
Jeff, do you have anything to add?
No, I've just been trying to measure. I don't know, and I don't know where all the other ones are to see if, you know, when Christy said that about setting a precedence, or it's closer, I don't know. I was trying to figure out some of them. And, you know, it looks like that Lehigh is 600 feet away and some of those kind of things. But not having that, I just don't know. And is it, now, community locations, is it church, school, park, playground, or library? Is that the property or the actual school?
It's just the property line.
Yeah, so they have measured that, and that was, the map shows, and it's nice that the city is who does the measuring, you know, so you know that the city is who makes that determination of where it is, and I know that's been the city involvement to this point, is just letting them know what's within that proximity. All right. Any other comments?
I do have just the final comment I have under the Department of Alcohol Beverage Control proximity restrictions. It does say that if you have a variance towards, or if you have an exception to the variance, that you have to have written consent and a public hearing has been held. So perhaps, and then you have to do two other options, but you have to at least have a public hearing. So perhaps we're putting the cart before the horse.
The city has the public hearing, not us.
That's what I'm saying, is that maybe it's best for them to pursue their avenue before we give our consent. Maybe they need to have their public hearing and we hear from the public that surrounds that area before the school board says yes or no.
They can't have the public hearing until they have our sign up.
That's necessarily the truth.
Frank, what were you told by the city?
I don't know if it's that they can't, but what they've done, and I would say this is part of their process of identifying what the community members want, and then they would consider us to be members of that community. So that's why they've asked the board to say, is the board okay with the liquor license in that area? I say that I view that as the city is viewing us as one of the residents of the community, so this is part of their process of gathering community input. And I think what their perception is if the district says no, if the school board says no, then we aren't even going to do the public hearings and such because,
the major... Well, the talked about it.
Right. So...
It hasn't even been on their agenda, so we don't even know what...
I recognize that. As has been stated, the instruction that was given to Crum Brothers was before it will be on a council agenda, and I can clarify that some more, before it will be on a council agenda, they wanted to find out what the school board's position would be. As part of the gathering of information process for determining whether the individuals who live in that community are okay with the change in the liquor license. If the district were to say no, then that would form part of their decision whether to move forward with the public hearings. If the district says yes, that would be part of what determines whether they feel they can move forward with the hearings. They have not begun that process yet because they wanted to know the district's position before they decided what course they were going to take. So yes, they have not yet held a meeting to discuss it because they wanted information from the school board first.
So if the board doesn't allow the variance, then there really is no reason for a public
comment. There's no reason for public comment. There's nothing to discuss.
I mean,
shuts it down right there.
Yeah, I would have much more of a problem if it were for a bar or a convenience store or something like that.
But we don't have to give permission for a bar, a convenience store.
If they're selling alcohol.
If they're selling alcohol, we do. Yeah. If it's within 100, if it's within that same...
For them to sell alcohol.
Oh, sorry.
So you don't have to approve the convenience store, but for them to sell alcohol.
Right.
All right. Any more discussion? Then now we will move to a vote. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor of giving for permission for, make sure I'm stating this correctly, permission for Crum Brothers to proceed. With obtaining a liquor license, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Did I hear all those opposed? Say nay.
Nay.
All right. It passes 4-1. All right. Our next item.
Can I ask a question? Okay. Before we vote, is there an opportunity to ask about how the motion is stated?
And that's what I did to Frank right there.
And that's what I want to make sure is that, so I'm talking to Kelly, I guess. It's what I would like to make sure is that in our minutes and in our paper is that we don't decide whether they get a liquor license. We just decide whether they move forward.
Which is why I announced that for my the vote is, does the board give approval for Crum Brothers to proceed, to move forward, proceed in obtaining a liquor license?
Because we don't ever do it for any,
Right. That's why I worded it the way I did, because We aren't saying yay or nay whether we favor it, but we're giving them approval.
Well, you're giving them the you're approving the variance.
There's not a variance.
Yes, there is.
There's a
600-foot variance that they're in.
And so within that area. So, yes. So, all right, we have one other item of business. That is action on the Logan High School soccer tournament. Superintendent.
Yes, Logan High School received an email from them just yesterday. On January 7th, Coach Rasmussen received notification that they had been invited to participate in a preseason tournament on March 17th, 18th, and 19th down in St. George. It did not show up on our earlier travel requests to be approved by the board simply because they hadn't received the invitation at that point. Since they just got it this week, they asked, can we still present this to the board? It's a typical high school tournament. It's at Desert Hills. There are several schools participating. As you have in your board book, you have the schedule for it. This is just a late proposal for them to be approved for the overnight travel to participate in that boys' soccer tournament. That's all it is. It simply is late because they got late notification.
Well, and I also know it's the 18th and there's no school anyway, so they're really only missing a day of school.
Yeah, so it could be a lot worse.
Yeah. My question was, and I could have flipped back, but I ran out of time today because I was finding out about the county caucuses. Is the soccer team traveling elsewhere in the spring?
They weren't approved to travel other than their regular season play.
Okay, that's what I thought.
They for another tournament.
Because Sven wasn't the coach yet.
Because they were trying with the girls' team to get it approved during the summer, but it was actually during their dead period. But with the boys don't have a tournament like
that. Okay, good. Thank you for looking at that. That was my only question. Yeah. Lynn, what about you? And Connie, what about you? You okay? Do you have any questions regarding it?
I'm fine with it right from the beginning.
Christy, any questions?
I think it's great.
Okay, is there a motion?
I'll make a motion that we approve the soccer tournament.
All right, it has been moved by Lynn and seconded by Connie. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. I appreciate you being here tonight. We appreciate those of you who are in the audience. We heard Kelly is gone, but Kelly announced that her last day at the Herald Journal will be Friday. And she's moving on to a better position, and we for her, and we wish her well. And we'll have to break in a new education reporter, and that's always challenging because if they haven't been to all of our meetings, they don't understand some of the background information. So
that's what Kelly was saying.
Interesting.
That's going to be hard, is that she hopes that they don't have someone. It's like, okay, this week you take it, next week you take it, or whatever, between Cash and Logan, because it takes time to get a feel for each. She was hoping they didn't do that.
And just for your all's information, Kelly and I did visit a little bit today about some of the bills that have been proposed for the legislative session. We just discussed and I shared some of the information that was discussed down at the USBA conference and in the Joint Legislative Committee and through business administrators and superintendents. So there may be a story coming out in the next day or two just regarding some of the bills, that education-related bills that are coming up in this session.
And you're all aware.
Thank you, Ann, for the souvenir.
Yes, we gave Connie a souvenir from our tour of the high school, so she knew we were thinking of her. So then we will adjourn this meeting
at Christmas
at 6:46.
I hope you get this.
Basketball's still going.
So you can go over and watch the rest of the girls' basketball if you want.
Oh,
go Grizz.